Ever played video games at an arcade? Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Millipede are examples of early artificial intelligence. These days, classic games are doing much more than killing space invaders or munching little dots. They're tools for developing AI for all sorts of other things, including self-driving cars.
I've had the opportunity to experience firsthand the development of self-driving cars that are made possible by a combination of advanced automatic braking and lane changing systems and artificial intelligence.
Michigan Senator Gary Peters at a subcommittee hearing in November.
Just last year, over 35,000 people died in motor vehicle crashes. With safe deployment, AI-fueled automated vehicles could significantly decrease this number, saving countless thousands of lives.
Games test our intelligence. They can also test artificial intelligence, such as whether a self-driving car recognizes a stop sign or a pedestrian. AI can now play complex board games, including Go and chess, better than any human. Complex video games are next, like this one, which is Minecraft.
Oh, that's probably for my villager, because I learned how to...
You have to set your own goals in Minecraft, and that requires curiosity. Something that comes naturally to a kid, but not a machine. The intersection of AI and video games.
This is the future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal.
From the newsroom in New York, I'm Jennifer Strong, and this is the future of everything. We begin in an arcade.
I'm Sarah Needleman. I'm a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and I cover the video game industry.
We need another quarter.
What are the earliest examples of artificial intelligence can be found in video games dating back to the classics like Millipede? When you're playing against the game itself, you're playing against artificial intelligence and its reaction to the moves you make and changing the game. In more modern video games, there are persistent open worlds where the AI is constantly making decisions and reacting and changing the environment that you play in.
To get a better understanding of where all this is going, we meet up with one of the world's leading experts on games and AI.
Hi, I'm Julian Tegelius. I'm an associate professor of computer science and engineering at New York University. So I work both on methods for making video games better using artificial intelligence and on methods for using video games to train better artificial intelligence.
In other words, he creates AI for games and games for AI.
The gamer demographic is getting more and more diverse. People of all ages, all genders, all ethnicities, etc., play games these days.
It's a huge opportunity for the game industry and a giant challenge.
They have different tastes, different capabilities. They think that different parts of the game playing experience is fun.
The cost of developing a multi-console video game can run into the hundreds of millions of dollars. Now that the game-playing demographic extends to include just about everyone, these games need to be smart enough to figure out who you are, then adapt.
So me and a number of other people have been working on ways of learning about you from how you play games.
The way you play a video game speaks volumes about your reaction time, how well you work as a team, the ability to plan ahead or find complex patterns. It has lots of implications. And that data could be used for any number of things.
So you mine the data from your gameplay experience, and then you can predict, for example, your personality traits or your life motives. You can, of course, also predict how good you're going to be at playing similar games or doing other things.
This might go without saying, but human intelligence and artificial intelligence are very different. Top chess-playing programs are based on massive algorithms that search millions of positions with each turn, while, at least for now, humans are better at abstract thought. And the more people like Julian Tegelius learn about how machines think, the more we learn about ourselves, including how people process information.
We're going to be better at characterizing how we make decisions in these dynamic environments by looking at how AIs make decisions and seeing that that's not what we do.
A goal of all of this is creating AI capable of complex thought.
When anyone says they understand the economy, for example, they are probably lying, because no one understands the economy. It's far too complex for that. So when we train AIs on a game like StarCraft, we're really training them to handle an extremely complex system.
StarCraft is a sci-fi game about a struggle for dominance in outer space,
which involves lots of resource management at different levels. StarCraft is a game about waging war, essentially, so you need to build units, build factories that can build units, research technologies, move the units into place, decide when and where to attack with what units, and so on.
Tegelius says playing complex games may help AI to one day be able to predict the effect of any given policy decision on the economy instantly.
There are other games which are more specifically economic simulations, like Civilization, an even more complex game. And when we train an AI to play that game, we train them to deal with this very, very complex situation.
But from there, it gets even more abstract.
So, for example, a game like Minecraft doesn't really have explicit goals. Instead, you set your own goals. You explore the world and come up with interesting things you want to build or interesting things you want to do. An AI that can play Minecraft well, we need to have a sense of curiosity, and we need to figure out what it wants to do, and we need to find ways of actually doing that.
Perhaps the most immediate example of a real-world application of video games teaching AI about the human world is taking place with self-driving cars.
So my name is Arthur Filipowicz. I'm a graduating senior from the Operations Research Department. I'm part of Princeton Autonomous Vehicle Engineering, which is a group here at the university which is aiming to build a self-driving car.
The group is also known as PAVE.
When I came to the university and I joined PAVE, there was a graduate student named Chaney Chan who was working on training a car to determine distances to lane markings and to cars in front of it using a racing game called Torx. And at the same time, I heard that Grand Theft Auto was coming out with Grand Theft Auto 5. I was like, well, this is the perfect combination. But unfortunately, in the beginning, Grand Theft Auto came out only for Xbox and PlayStation.
And it's much harder to interact with a game on those platforms.
And when a friend of mine told me, oh, yeah, you know, GTA is on PC now, I was like, really? And so I went online, okay, sure, it's on the PC. And then I said, okay, well, I'm sure there are people out there who are already modding this to give the character superpowers and whatnot. And I thought, well, look, if they can mod it to make the character fly or whatever, then I can mod it to just get me, you know, whether or not there's a stop sign in the image. I mean, that's so much simpler. It's a lot less interesting, but at the same time, you can apply it.
PAVE started about a dozen years ago as part of a government-funded prize competition for self-driving cars.
A bunch of universities, including Princeton, decided to participate in challenges, and the first challenge was build a car that can go around this track in the desert. And that's where PAVE started. Their first car was called Prospect 11. And now we have Prospect 13, which was donated to us by Ford about 2 years ago. And since then, we've been mostly focusing on accessing all of the car's control to be able to control it. The other effort in the club is to work on machine learning and building AI systems.
They have to work to access the car's controls because these systems are proprietary. Ford gave them the car, but not how to plug into its systems. We take a closer look.
Looks like any other car. The main difference is in the front of the vehicle we have a camera on the roof, and in the back of the vehicle we have a computer with a few wires running in between it, the camera, and then the braking and steering and the throttle. The images are taken by the camera in the front. They're sent into the computer, which is in the trunk. That computer then processes the images, and it makes a decision as to where to drive the car, if it should stop the car, or whether pedestrians on the road.
He sees endless potential for video games teaching AI, extending well beyond this effort.
There aren't that many ways that a computer can collect information from the real world. There are radar, LiDAR, which is becoming quite popular. But unfortunately, those other methods, such as sonar, all have various limitations. There are weather conditions that can get in the way. They maybe only detect metal objects or very dense objects, whereas vision, and again, this depends on the application, but vision tends to be very flexible, and it tells you a lot more information. It tells you the color, it can tell you perhaps the shape a little bit better, And so there are many applications where you want to use vision, but you can't use it unless the computer can interpret it. And so you really need games to generate the data to train it.
You could go about that in video games exactly the way we do it in the real world.
And that is, you have a virtual environment. You can put in a virtual car, put in a camera on that vehicle, drive around and just collect images as you're driving in the game, and at the same time ask the game to tell you whether or not there's a stop sign.
But he says going about it in an artificial way is more efficient, and it produces better results.
Pick a location. The vehicle will start on this line, it's going to end at some point on this line, and I'll ask the game to put a stop sign in this location. What the computer would do is it would automatically drive the car from the beginning to the end, taking pictures as it's going, and when it got to the end, it would retrace the same route, but without the stop sign. And then once it did the pair of runs like that, then it would change the weather, and then it would change the time. And once it went through all the possibilities, I would have 500,000 of images to train the computer on.
Even the simple trick of being in the same location with and without a stop sign taught him quite a bit.
Not only would it be intuitive for humans, if I showed you two images, the only difference is the stop sign, though, so that's what the stop sign is. It actually is more intuitive and easier for computers to learn. And that's actually something very unique to video games, because besides all the other difficulties, if you tried reproducing that trick in the real world, I mean, you know, one approach is you take pictures and you take out the stop sign, take more pictures. I mean, you know, or you can Photoshop it out. But again, it's a lot more effort.
It's a small example that shows we're still just at the start of all this.
A lot of that effort developing these games and getting them to the point where you have these massive, beautiful, realistic worlds wasn't just, you know, a waste of time. It wasn't just for entertainment. It may actually have real industrial applications and sort of drive the next wave of technology.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from The Wall Street Journal's Sarah Needleman, Mike Miller, Jennifer Hicks, Larry Root, Tanya Bustos, and Charlie Turner. If you like what you hear, make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong from The Newsroom in New York.
Love tech? Dig gadgets? Then make Tech News Briefing from The Wall Street Journal a part of your day. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.